In 2003, Nike signed 13-year-old Freddie Adu to a 7-figure contract. But Freddie didn't live up to the hype. He has turned down every single documentary project looking closely at the details of his career. Until now.
People are going to look at everything you did because of the hype surrounding your arrival and what they think you can be.
I'm Grant Wall, and this is American Prodigy, Freddie Adu, from Blue Wire Podcasts.
And welcome to the Light Years podcast. Andy, how you feeling?
You know, I see you wearing a U-neck. I think it's going down to your belly button right now. And, you know, nothing makes me feel better. Also, it's a little weird when we record during the daytime before the sun sets. So it feels great. And the Niners just beat the Rams 4 in a row. We are back in the playoff race. Whew! Is there anything better than Nick Mullins? Nothing better. Nothing better in the league.
The Eric Paschal of quarterbacks.
Wait, no, that'd be a good thing if he was.
Yeah. Dude, the Niners are good. They're going to be good next year once their roster is not half on the infirmary. I actually just had the best chicken sandwich I've ever had. So you'll appreciate this. My friends started a pop-up where they will, once every month, will make these hot chicken sandwiches, and all the money goes to charity to help people during the pandemic. Obviously, it's been a rough nine months for everyone. So check them out at Instagram at Hot Chicken Bros.
Hot Chicken Bros.
It's so good. It's like the best fried chicken sandwich I've had. I got it medium. I didn't go the full spicy, but the kick was good.
I wish she had told me earlier. I was on a date last night. She asked me, "Well, if you had a last meal you can only have," I said, "Fried chicken, any fried chicken." It's literally nothing better in the world than fried chicken. So Hot Chicken Bros.
They're right in your backyard too. They're in the Richmond District in San Francisco. But yeah, they do like a pop-up once a month, and all the money goes to some charity helping people out during the pandemic. So I don't know when they're doing it next. Best way to find out is just follow them on Instagram. Nice. But with that said, let's get in. Dude, we're recording this Sunday, 5 p.m. Warriors officially open camp Tuesday, December 1st. It's individual workouts for that first week, and then team workouts start over the weekend. We are back.
Yeah, it took a long time, but now it's coming all at once. The preseason is coming, I think, in less than 2 weeks. And then the regular season, it starts with training camp. I think this is the most important training camp that we have seen since
Kerr took over.
Yes. Even with KD, it was like, yeah, there's going to be some growing pains, but they're too good not to figure it out unless like KD's just like an asshole and doesn't listen, right? This is the training camp where I think it's like new coach, like the one Andre Iguodala is coming off the bench. Did you remember, Sam, when they said that Harrison Barnes, like Peter Vexey, or they were saying Harrison Barnes was having like one of the greatest training camps ever? And then he was going to be a starter. Andre Iguodala was coming off the bench. Like, the stuff that you were hearing was so funny looking back. But yes, I think this is the most important one since then.
Absolutely. And I spent most of this weekend watching college basketball. I cannot tell you how excited I am for this draft. I feel like we are going to get to double dip if everything works out right. I think this Warriors team is going to be playoff competitive. They have a chance to make a little noise. The Klay injury is obviously a bummer. I feel like with Klay, they would have been a true contender. Mm-hmm. This year is more of a like get in the playoffs, see what you got, and retool for next year type of year. But they get that Wolves pick. And you know how everyone was talking about how the 2021 draft is the best draft and all this stuff? I'm watching some of these guys play over the weekend. I'm like, I would take Jalen Johnson number one overall over Anthony Edwards or James Wiseman. Cade Cunningham looked as good as advertised. Jalen Suggs. I mean, there is a long list. We didn't even get to see half the guys this weekend because, you know, pandemic season, not every college team has started. But it's actually, you know what it reminds me of? It reminds me of like the Celtics 5 years ago when they were like good but not great, but they also had those Nets picks so they could play both sides of the coin. Like they could watch Isaiah Thomas and Al Horford and like this little fun team they had that wasn't anything special, but it was fun. But they also had the high draft picks, so they could keep their eye on Markelle Fultz, Tatum, whoever it may be. Really the best of both worlds if you're not like the elite, elite contender who's going to be winning the title.
I saw a BJ Boston highlight where he did like a three-step dribble combo into a step-back three. And it's not like he's Jalen Suggs. Jalen Suggs is a guard.
Yeah.
And BJ Boston's like, what, six?
He claims 6'7".
I think he's six.
I think he's a guard, but he's wing-sized.
I mean, my God. Like, the last time I saw someone do that, like, Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre, both, I guess, long wingspans and wings and, you know, athletic. They can't do that.
Yeah,
that move, that 2 second move that I watched, neither of them can do that.
Yep. Yeah, it's like I'm watching these guys, and you know what hit me? All these dudes were like 10, 11, 12 when the Warriors got really good, and all these dudes look like they're inspired by Steph or Draymond or James Harden or LeBron. They all like, and it's like the first generation of like guys with certain level of physical gifts where they've been watching the game played the way the Warriors play it, and they're starting to apply it that way. Like, I'm watching like Jalen Suggs. I'm like, this guy looks like he's been playing in Kerr's motion offense for years. You know, I'm watching like Jalen Johnson. I'm like, point forward. This guy does like some Draymond things, some LeBron things. Like, I'm not saying he's going to be as good as either, but it's like, you know how like a decade ago you didn't see guys come in with those skill sets.
Somebody asked me last night, and he was like, have you ever seen like some of these guys? He was talking about LaMelo Ball.
Right.
And he was like, have you ever seen these guys this athletic and this skilled like ever in this year of basketball? And you're like, yeah, I mean, you can think of like the Magic Johnsons, the MJs, like the great ones, right? But I don't think LaMelo's going to be a great one. And he's still going to be someone you're like, damn, he's 6'7". He can dribble. He can pass. You know, he can slash. He can maybe shoot, right? And then you look at this draft, and now you're like, damn, of course there's guys that have always been like, I think Cade Cunningham, there's always going to be like that guy coming around who's just going to be a generational talent. But then like, I don't know if BJ Boston is, or I don't know if
Zaire Williams,
Jalen Green. Yeah, these guys. But then even if they're decent NBA players, they've got skill sets that you've never seen before. It's like guys didn't think of being able to shoot step back threes back then, because that wasn't a thing that was a thing until Steph came around, until James Harden really like shot 30 of them and made it annoying to watch. But like that type of skill. Yeah, you're right. I mean, that type of stuff you rarely see. And that's back to your Boston comment. It will be fascinating to see, because I don't think Boston ever wanted to trade that pick. I don't think they ever wanted to cash it in,
right?
Those picks. I would be curious to see if Golden State would think about cashing it in, because the more you're going to watch the season, if the first weekend is as advertised, the more you watch the season, I bet you the more that pick is going to skyrocket in terms of value. Like, the Warriors can put that thing on the table and I think can get some type of star come maybe not midseason, but the next offseason.
Yeah, you think about like people like just trade the pick for Marcus Smart and all that sort of stuff. And like now you're kind of like, and Marcus Smart's excellent. He's a winning player. But you're like, if you threw away a chance to get some wing who can be like a foundational piece for the next 12 years for a good role player for a team that might not even exist because Clay's not there. It might work out for the Warriors, but if nothing else, it's super exciting.
Yeah, you better give me Ben Simmons. But even then, I'm like, well, I can get someone that can actually shoot the ball and is athletic as Ben Simmons. So I don't even want Ben. So like, give me the pick instead. Right now, we're getting a little bit too far ahead of ourselves. But like, that's the stuff you're seeing with Jalen Johnson. I'm only watching highlights. I'm not watching the games. You are, because you're deranged. It's fucking 10 a.m. on a Saturday and you're watching. I am not. I'm watching the highlights and some of this body control stuff. Some of the stuff where you're watching these guys, you're like, damn, these guys could probably play in the NBA now. Like, I would have these guys playing over pretty much every player in the draft that we're watching today. Because even if you watch Anthony Edwards, you didn't see the type of like explosion, length, and like scoring ability that he had. But again, who knows?
You saw the physical tools. You didn't see like body. You didn't see basketball skills as much.
Yeah, this is pretty nuts stuff. But we'll keep track of it as it goes on. We should probably do like a segment every couple of weeks or so on some of the college.
Yeah, we gotta get like an official draft, like yours draft correspondent. We'll put Neil to it. Neil, your new job is to watch 500 college games a week and report back to us.
Yeah, this it's gonna be a fun one.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll be checking in on that all year. But obviously, what's more important is Steph Curry is back, Draymond Green is back, and the Warriors are in for, I didn't see this being the way the season was going to go about 2 weeks ago, but I've already pivoted and I'm excited for it. This episode, we're going to do our five big questions for the Warriors going into the season. Camp starts this week. You know, we got some questions here. So let's start with number one. Andy, now that everyone knows who the roster is, give or take maybe a move on the margin, how do you think this team should play this year?
So before Steve Kerr was on the team, you remember the Mark Jackson days, the way they played offense was Steph and Clay just chuck up whatever you want. Actually, it worked to a degree because they just had the confidence to pretty much do anything that they wanted. And all we asked for was like, please, is there something else? Is there something else? And they went ahead and got Steve Kerr, and then he immediately implemented an offense. Like, literally took him like a month, and this team became a championship team. So, and Steve Kerr talked about it. I remember all the media guys were writing about it. And I think that's the same thing that's going to happen this offseason. It seems like that's all Steve Kerr is talking about. It seems like that's all the Warriors are talking about, this run and gun, but with some type of athleticism with it.
Yeah. 7 seconds for Steph.
It seems like the more they're talking about it, the more that's going to be like, it's not a thing that we have to help for anymore is what I'm trying to say. I don't think I don't think when we say, oh, stop running that motion offense or like praying that they do the same thing that they did a year ago, I think that's out the window. I think they are going to implement a really fast offense. I just don't know how it's going to work. That's the only, like, that's why it's a question. I just don't know how they're going to do it. I guess if I did, I'd be Steve Kerr. But I think there's no question that they're going to try it.
Yeah, so I was trying to think of what type of teams do I want them to play like, and two teams have come to mind for me. And that's the Don Nelson We Believe Warriors and the kind of Boston Celtics of the last few years. The reason I focus on the Celtics is because they kind of run a motion offense too, but they really only have had two guys who are playmakers the whole time. Like, it was Kyrie and Horford or Kemba and Hayward. And like their wings, well, like, I'd rather have Jason Tatum than Wiggins or Oubre and Jaylen Brown. But like, neither of those guys are really playmakers. They kind of counted on the point guard and the point forward, whether it was Horford or Hayward, to be kind of the guys who organize the team and then let the wings do their wing thing in the half court. And I think that makes a lot more sense than some of the triangle sets the Warriors have been running, because I don't, you know, I just don't think the Warriors have enough passers. I think it's going to be a lot of Draymond and Steph making every decision and letting Oubre, Wiggins, Bazemore, Wiseman, whoever it may be, play off of them. You can't get too cute with like having, you know, Steph and Oubre run a split cut off of Wiseman as the playmaker. You know, you can't do that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it is going to be a lot more, I don't know if it's going to be a lot more pick and roll, but I think it's going to be a lot more set action this season. It's just going to be a lot of, you mentioned Boston. I think Boston too. I'm also thinking Miami. You watch Miami play. Their offense is pretty, they don't have many guys that can also play make. I don't think of Jimmy Butler as a playmaker either. He's kind of a guy just looks for a shot, and then if he doesn't get a shot, he'll pass it or he'll dump it down. But they ran a lot of set plays.
Sure.
And it's like not that pretty, but effective, because they had Duncan Robinson and they also had like Tyler Hero, who tried really hard. But the difference is they have Bam Adebayo, who the Warriors do have. Actually, they have Draymond Green. So I think that's probably what they're going to do. Just a lot of set plays, a lot of four high type of stuff. And less so on the motion side, because there's no way they can run it unless Steve Kerr says, all right, I'm going to play Kevon Looney 30 minutes a game. If they do, then they may be able to run some motion stuff, because Looney's pretty smart too, but you can't bank on that.
Yeah. And I also feel like, you can't depend on, Wiggins and Oubre and those guys to make all the reads you're used to, Iguodala or, you know, Clay or those guys. It's just a different roster. I want to get back to your first point on running. I do think this team's identity will be defined by their defense. As long as they defend and get out in transition, I feel pretty confident that they'll get W's. And they have the length and enough defensive IQ to get it done. It's a question of if they come together and actually defend as a unit. If they don't defend, I don't have any faith in this team doing anything of substance. It's really that simple for me.
The new thing I've been concerned about lately is I love James Wiseman, but then I did think they were going to get like an Aaron Baines. I did think they were going to get a veteran center, and I think they tried, but I don't think they ended up getting those. Like, obviously they didn't, but I think they tried. I think somebody said they were second. Like, they would have got him if Clay was healthy, is what you always say, and that has to be true for guys like Gasol and Baines, even though they probably wouldn't close games. But the problem is, you better hope the problem is you actually need Kevon Looney here to play big minutes for this team to be successful if you're not going to get a veteran big. If Kevon Looney can't play 25 minutes a game and shore up the defense and be that smart guy on defense, then I don't think they can play a good defense, because then James Wiseman probably will be a good defender, but you have to wait 2 years to get there. You know what I mean? So that's the new fear that I have, is that they need Kevon Looney to play 25, 28 solid minutes on defense, because there's nobody else. There's nobody else there, unless you think James Wiseman is going to be automatically above average defensive player, which I don't know if you can bank on that.
If he's automatically that, let's put him in the Hall of Fame, because God knows how good he'll be at 25, 26. That actually brings us to our second question. You kind of walked right into it. What is the and it is my biggest question for the team. What does the big man rotation look like?
I was going to ask your thoughts on Marquese Chriss, because you have Dedmon sitting here, but like, Marquese Chriss might be the start on opening night. Like, there is a formula where Steve Kerr is just going to say, well, whatever James Wiseman can do right now, it's not good enough. We can do the same thing with Marquese Chriss, but he knows his system a little bit better. He averaged like a block a game, even though I don't think he's very good on defense. But they just might play him because he's more familiar, and then you back it up with Looney, and then you can see if you can throw Wiseman in there for a few minutes, which I don't know if that's the most successful thing. That becomes how good do you think Marquese Chriss is as a player? Is he an actual winning player? I don't think so. To me, he's JaVale McGee kind of. But then the thing is, when they had JaVale McGee, they could at least back him up with David West and solid players like that, and then just go with Draymond Green at center. I don't know if they can do that here.
I'm getting worried about the center position, because to the point you made, they now need Looney to be what they were hoping they were going to get from like someone like Aaron Baines, who they struck out on. It could be the undoing of the team. I mean, I'm seeing right now Nicholas Batum is going to sign with the Clippers, and that's another guy I thought the Warriors could potentially get, but like, honestly, like, I don't blame guys like Batum for choosing the LA teams over the Warriors when it's clear the Warriors are kind of a step below them without Clay at this point. And that's kind of the reality the Warriors are in. Getting back to the big man rotation, I think Wiseman plays 20 minutes a game. I might start him even. It might be easier to start him because he can play next to Draymond, who's going to you know, Draymond's the best communicator. It's kind of his best chance of success against Draymond or next to Draymond. But there's another 28 minutes to be played at center, and right now it's just Looney and Marquese Chriss. We know Looney can defend, but I don't know what kind of shape he's in physically or how long he can hold up. Like, it's just a lot of weight on Kevon Looney's shoulders at this point.
And then we're going to get to this guy later, because we have a bench progression topic we want to talk about. But you always want to end with Draymond at center. It's harder to do that unless you do Steph, Bazemore because of length, maybe Wanamaker, Kelly Oubre, Andrew Wiggins, and then Draymond Green. Then you run Kelly Oubre at the four. And this goes back to the question earlier: how should this team play this year? That way, you can still go small. You can essentially duplicate or try to replicate what's been working the last few years in terms of size and athleticism, but then where's the shooting? Are they actually going to be able to play defense?
Are they also good enough on defense? Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem. And that's where it's like, well, if you can get Kevon Looney to play well, then you probably can take out one of those guys. And this will lead to the guy that I think should be that, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah, I mean, okay, I want to get back to Marquese Chriss. The coaching staff loves him. I actually think he's been a good find for them, but I didn't see anything last year that made me think he's going to figure it out on defense. To me, he figured out a role on offense, which makes him a useful change of pace guy. you know, to bring in, to give you a little instant offense, a spark of energy off the bench. He did average 9.6 rebounds in 20 minutes last year. When he was starting those last 20 games, I think he was averaging like 15 and 10. Like, he is an offensive piece, but I don't know if he's a defensive piece for them. He does have the physical skills to be a kind of guy who can switch and do a lot of things, but he's shown no ability to at this point. And to me, it just seems like at every other position on this roster, obviously at point guard, you have Steph. And then behind him, you have Wanamaker, who is just a solid, you know, boring veteran, but like, he's solid. On the wings, you have Wiggins, Oubre, Bazemore. Bazemore's a solid vet. The other two have at least proven to be starting caliber players in the NBA, maybe disappointing relative to expectations, but starters. Draymond and Pascal at the four go without saying. And then you're at the five position and you're like, I don't know what we're getting here. You know, like, Wiseman's the future, but like, that doesn't mean he's ready to be the dude by Christmas. Looney's injury history is just terrifying. And then Marquese Chris was a really nice little find for them last year, but like, are we really ready to put that much responsibility on Marquese Chris's shoulders? Like, can you get to the playoffs if Marquese Chris is your go-to center?
Yeah, that's the God, I can't believe we sound like Steve Kerr right now. Steve Kerr is probably talking to Bob Myers and Kirk and saying, yeah, you got to get me another center. And it's crazy that I think even if they didn't have Alan Smalagic, even if he wasn't on the roster right now, they would still be in a center position. Like, he's not the reason why they couldn't sign Marc Gasol, right? He's not the reason why they couldn't sign Aaron Baines. If they wanted Aaron Baines and he wanted them, he'd be signed to the Warriors, regardless of Smalagic. The problem here is that they just have so many centers that can maybe play and maybe not play. Looney can play, but he can't stay healthy, right? So it's a lot on James Wiseman's shoulders. It's a lot. And that's why they drafted him. So I think some people are saying, like, well, you want to draft the best player available. I think they thought he was the best player available. He was also the best fit. Because you draft LaMelo Ball, how much is he really helping this team more this season than someone like Brad Wanamaker? By the way, also, the other thing is, I don't think not signing Glenn Robinson or Nico Batum are bad things. Like, I don't think those guys move the needle that much. Like, I don't think those guys matter. You rather just... what's the difference between Brad Wanamaker and Ken Bazemore to me than Batum and Glenn Robinson? It's pretty minute, if anything at all. We don't know if Batum can play. Glenn Robinson, you know what you're going to get out of him. It's fine. It's nothing special. So I think them not picking up those guys and keeping someone like Michael Mulder, who I think we're going to get to in about a second, is worth it. I think you keep that upside for someone that you think or has shot that percentage from three. So I think it's all to say that the Warriors offseason was fine. I think a lot of it does rest on James Wiseman's shoulders. A lot of it. If they want to be
four seed. And that seems unfair to me. So we'll see. Yes. Who knows? Yes. By the time this pod is released, maybe they sign Dwayne Dedman. And it's, you know, Dedman is a flawed player. If he wasn't a flawed player, he'd be on an NBA roster already. But he is at least another veteran big body who knows how to carry out a defensive game plan. I would feel a lot more comfortable if the Warriors just had one other big like that, because my other concern is overusing Wiseman early in the season when he isn't physically developed is how he ends up with like sprained shoulder, bruised hip, the type of thing that ends him playing like 50 games his rookie year instead of all 72 this year. And for me, I'd rather have Wiseman play 15 to 20, you know, like about 20 minutes a game and play all 70 than try to have him play 30 minutes a game. And by the 15th game, he's out with a shoulder sprain because he has to bang Jokic, Gobert, Anthony Davis all in back-to-back games. And like, he's 19 and those dudes have grown man bodies.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way they do that too. You know, Steve's as conservative as they come, not politically, but on as a coach. Like, so he's like, I don't think there's any way that happens. But then, like, Steve's gonna rather just throw Marquese Chris out there, right? Like, no matter, like, he's not gonna push Wiseman to 30 minutes a game unless Wiseman's playing that well.
It's a team with like without a big center where you're like, you're not as worried about him getting the wear and tear from like Gobert elbowing him all game.
I think a good comp for James Wiseman, I know we're meant to make this a James Wiseman pod, but I'm really excited for what he's going to show here in a few weeks. I think a good comp for him in terms of playing style and potential is Jaren Jackson Jr. I think is a pretty decent comp for someone like Jaren.
Ooh, if he turns into Jaren Jackson Jr., there will be another ring in the Bay Area before Steph retires. I will put money on it if that happens. I don't even know how you measure that, but I put money on it.
Because I feel like, yeah, and Jaren Jackson came out and kind of like Wiseman a little bit in terms of like you didn't know much about them. Both guys super young. I think they're both 18, 19 years old when they came out. But you watch Jaren Jackson play. He got hurt also. So that was one problem. But he could shoot. That's one. He could shoot. And I'm not talking about like at the rim. I think he shot like 50%, which is like, I mean, he's a big. So I assume why
he shot. I just so you have it. He shot 36% from three as a rookie, 39.5 last year.
Six threes.
Yeah. I mean, he could shoot the ball, but yeah, if Wiseman can shoot 36% from three next year, I will do a naked lap around San Francisco. I'll be very happy.
around Dolores Park, 1.6 blocks a game.
I will not do that. I can already hear Sheed cutting that out and throwing it on the timeline.
But I think that's a good comp for him in terms of like, I think they have a little bit of the same playing style. Jaren Jackson shoots a lot outside. He can move very well. He can attack the rim, even though he's super, super long and super tall like Wiseman. Also, Jaren Jackson could be a great defender. It's not like he's Karl-Anthony Towns with DeAndre Ayton, right? I think those guys, you're like, well, they could be, but they're probably not going to be good defenders. I think with Jaren Jackson, a little bit different. He probably will end up being a good defender. So I think that's the comp I have for James Wiseman. So if Wiseman shows the type of potential that Jaren Jackson has, I don't think it's out of the question also for him to do that. So I think that's probably my realistic thought process. The other thing is he fouls a lot, but that's every rookie big.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other part of it. He just has to, I mean, there's just not much he can do about that. He's going to foul, which is why we want them to just get another big man just to have the option on the roster. Anyway, we've exhausted this question. I do think the big man is my big question. My number two big question is where can this team get shooting outside of Steph Curry?
Yeah, this is the rough one, because if I tell you Michael Mulder, which is the guy that I talked about, which I'd fine with him keeping over signing someone like Batum or Glenn Robinson, he's not going to play enough for that to matter. Like, even if he shoots, I think he shot 31% from three last season.
Yeah, but he shot just. I'm going to give you a number here. He shot 41% over the last two G League seasons on 8.5 3-point attempts. Like, that's serious volume.
Yeah, I'm just going to say he can fucking shoot, right? Like, he not only can his numbers say he can shoot, like, he looks like he can shoot. It's not like Andrew Wiggins, who doesn't look like he could shoot, but at least he shoots 35% from three, or 33, or I don't know what he's at nowadays. Who knows? But I don't think they're getting any shooting outside of Steph. I think it's going to be on a night-to-night basis who's hot. They have so many mediocre three-point shooters that I think it's going to be whichever guy is going to have the 4-for-9 night. Whichever guy is going to shoot, you know, 3-for-8 that night is going to be the shooter. And I think that's just that's how the careers have gone for Andrew Wiggins, Kelly Oubre, and Ken Bazemore. And Ken Bazemore was a guy that shot like almost 40%+ last season for Sacramento when he played with them. But before that, he was shooting sub 30. For a long stretch of time. He's just a guy that's streaky. Same with Wiggins. And then Oubre, maybe I have a little bit more confidence that he could be that guy. So if I had to pick one, I'd pick Oubre, but I think it's just going to be a night-to-night basis of whoever's going to shoot best.
Yeah, so
definitely not Draymond.
I'm going to give you some numbers here. Last year, obviously, Steph missed the full season. Last year, they took 31.3 three-point attempts a game. That was 25th in the NBA. They shot 33.4%. That's 29th in the NBA. Now, if you were to ask me what percentage does this roster shoot if Steph doesn't play, they're about a 33 to 34% three-point shooting roster. Like, I don't have a lot of hope that Wiggins or Oubre are going to turn into great shooters. I just think they're streaky shooters. But if this – I'm going to keep the numbers coming. Let's assume Steph takes 12 threes a game. He can do that, right? That's not as many as Harden because he's not going to take 40 step backs in a row. But that's like second most in the league. And he shoots about 40% on that. And everyone else on the roster shoots about 33%, makes 1 in 3. This team would end up with about 36% from the field as a team. 36% is exactly middle of the road. For me, I think that's kind of where they land. I think if this team takes 35 threes a game and it splits out that way where Steph does a Steph thing and everyone else is kind of streaky, they're going to be a middle of the road 3-point shooting team. And I think that's good enough if they defend. I don't have too many hopes that they're going to get better 3-point shooting. Like Wanamaker is a good shooter, but he doesn't take volume. He's a guy who takes like,
and he shouldn't.
He has a slow release too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bazemore is no different than Oubre or Wiggins. I mean, he's shot better at times, yep, but he's generally,
yep,
up and down.
Same thing. Yep.
And then there's, you know, Mulder. Your best case for Mulder is he kind of figures out like a Bryn Forbes type role. You know how like Pop uses Bryn Forbes up and down depending on the matchup? Maybe Michael Mulder can do that for the Warriors, where you're like, we need shooting, so we're going to play him for 5-6 minutes here.
I love to get Bryn the Forbes
shooting going. Yeah, I mean, they need to mix and match this thing right now because they don't have Steph and Clay where it's like, all right, we got all the spacing we need with these two dudes. Now it's going to be a lot of mix and match. And then we haven't even got into it, but this will be in the next question. Jordan Poole and Eric Paschal are somewhat of X factors for this team's, yes, ceiling going forward.
Let's talk about scheme, because before we go to the next question, love the numbers. The scheme part is huge. What Steve Kerr did with the mid-range jump shots, I think, was more, hey, we have the greatest shooters ever. We have the three greatest shooters of all time, Steph, Clay, KD. I don't give a shit what you guys shoot. Right, you guys can shoot a three, you guys shoot a mid-range, just shoot a shot. Whatever shot you shoot is going to be the best shot at that time on the floor. Because more often than not, it's going in. One KD shooting like 55% from mid-range, something ridiculous, right? I think he realizes that, and I think part of what he's going to try to do this season in terms of playing up and down is Oubre and Wiggins. If you get open mid-range jump shot, sure, take it, but do not turn down the three, because it's not like these guys are great mid-range shooters. So if you're going to shoot a shot, shoot a three or take like classic advanced stat stuff, right? But I think it's something that they're going to have to implement, because they can't have a team that was shooting mid-range jump shots because Steve Kerr's thinking, well, they're locking down the three, so we're going to have to take the next available shot, and that's going to be the mid-range shot. It's like, yeah, it might be, but not for these streaky guys to shoot these type of mid-range jump shots. Shoot that three instead. So I think that's going to be a big thing as well, is what type of shots they're going to take, because they better shoot 35 attempts is what you're saying, which is about top 10 here, top 12. They better shoot 35. Yeah,
it comes out to about 11th or 12th in the NBA.
So they have to shoot that much. They have to, I think, at the very least. They cannot go lower than that, because that would tell me that their scheme is still predicated around finding the quote-unquote open shot, and that's really not going to work for guys that really aren't shooters.
Yeah, when you don't have the talent, you sometimes have to take the early shot, which might be the best one you're going to get, because what the Warriors were able to do in the past was they trust the fact that they're smarter than you. So if they kick the ball around enough, they're going to get an open shot. That's not this roster. This roster might need to play 7 seconds or less. If Oubre is open with 18 seconds, put it up. That's the best shot you're getting. Because if it's not that, it's going to Steph and he's going to have to take 1-on-4.
Yeah. Yep. Let me do a couple of reads here before we move on. All right. So BetOnline, football is back. It's up and down. We've got the Ravens and the Steelers, the Niners, and who knows where they're playing next week. Maybe they'll play in Taiwan, where it's pretty open out there. You might not be at a game this year, but you can still be in on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today. Start off on wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today. Take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. You know the deal. Promo code BLUEWIRE, betonline.ag. It's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. Indeed, 2020 has already reshaped how we work, and it's almost over. Businesses across the globe are challenged to be their most efficient, which means every hire is critical. Indeed is here to help. Indeed is the number one job site in the world, with more total visits than any other job site, according to ComScore. Indeed helps you find quality candidates and quickly, so you can focus on hiring the person you need to keep your business going. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, and you can pause your account at any time, and there are no long-term contracts. And now, Indeed's new way of matching with candidates instantly delivers a short list of quality candidates whose resumes on Indeed match your job criteria that you can contact the moment you sponsor a job, making Indeed the only job site that can move as fast as you do. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it and fast. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now, Indeed.com/BlueWire. Offer valid through December 31st. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, man. Let's get to the next question here. So this brings us to the next question. Which bench guy's progression is most important this season? We kind of danced around this on the last. Wow, these are all flowing together. We've really put together a great show. Wow.
You really put together a great show. This is the guy that this is I've been thinking about this the last couple of days. This is the guy that has to show up this season. It's Eric Paschal. And we actually haven't talked about him much this offseason. To me, he needs to have a Montrezl Harrell type of impact. I don't think he's going to be a closing type of player. I don't think he's going to be a star. I don't even know if he's going to be able to play playoff games maybe when they get there, if and when they get there. But they need that type of energy off the bench. They need someone to score off the bench. Easy buckets, right? The type of easy buckets that Trez gets. He's not the same type of player, but he needs to have the same type of impact. Doesn't even need to shoot 35% from three. Like, I don't think he can, but he needs to be able to shoot it at maybe 32, like a Draymond style, 33%. But he's a great ISO scorer. Okay, good. He can get to the rim. He can finish through contact. He can shoot free throws, right? So if he's a guy that's coming off the bench and you're revolving the second, unit's offense around him, I think that's the guy that has to show up. I think he has a better handle than Andrew Wiggins and Oubre, at least functionally to the rim. So I think that's the guy that to me is going to have to average. I mean, I don't even care what he averages. He just needs to have the impact that Trez has. And for him to get there, I guess maybe you could talk about Jordan Poole, but that's my guy. That's the guy that needs to be good off the bench this season. He has to lead. He essentially needs to lead the team in bench scoring.
You want to be like the quote unquote sixth man.
Yep.
Yeah. It would be good. He's also another 6'6", 6'7" guy with a 7-foot wingspan, which kind of fits into what they want to do defensively. Even though as a young player, he wasn't a particularly great defender, but I think Paschal can get to passable on defense. If not better, honestly, he competes. For me, actually, the bigger one is Jordan Poole. We were just talking about shooting and shot creation. The dude can create a shot, and his shot looks good. It did not go in at all last year. In my opinion, it's a little too slow. And I should ask you this. Do you think it's easier for someone who has a good-looking jumper to speed up their shot or someone who has kind of a – let's just say has mechanical issues like Eric Paschal to fix that? Which do you think is more likely to be fixed? Well,
since I'm not a shooter, I won't pretend to act like I know, but
I'll save the boxing out questions for you.
Yeah. Since I'm not, you can ask me how to make backdoor passes and screens, but to me, it feels like the former is probably easier, right? Like it's always going to be easier to come from a baseline of, hey, the guy's a shooter, rather than making a mechanical change, unless you're telling me Eric Paschal is the next coming of Kawhi Leonard. And also there's really nothing that we've heard about Eric Paschal this offseason to think that he's figured something out shooting wise.
I mean, to be fair, the pandemic has just kind of shut down us learning anything about anyone's offseason.
But we'll see very soon. But I think Paschal was someone that last season they were supposed to change his shot because he was jumping 10 feet in the air to shoot a three. They changed it to a set shot or sort of a normal shot, but he wasn't comfortable with that, so he went right back to shooting beforehand. I don't know if that's a red flag. Doesn't seem great. Doesn't seem like that's a good sign for the future. So it'd be interesting to see how he shoots the three ball this year. I wouldn't count on it. Jordan Poole is probably someone I would count on to shoot a lot better than he did last season. Like you would think, what's successful for someone like Jordan Poole this season? 36%? I would think at least.
Yeah. I want to see him put up get shots up more. I would be happy with 36. I was actually thinking 37%, but it's the same thing, right? Like Oregon go over 1% here. for me, sorry, I was in my throat here. If he builds upon what we saw at the end of last year, which I don't know how much you can really read into that because they were awful at that point, and it wasn't like, you know, teams were coming with NBA Finals intensity against Jordan Poole at the end of the season. If he can look like the player that he's capable of being, which is a shot creator, kind of a heat check guy, basically a Lou Williams type off the bench, I think that'll go a long way for the Warriors because they'll give him a shot creator when Steph sits. And occasionally you can put him next to Steph when you just need some instant offense. And, you know, you realize, okay, putting two smaller guards next to each other is not going to be the greatest defensive thing, but for like a 3-minute spurt, this will get us going. I also think he's most important because I'm okay with Eric Paschal being the exact same player he was last year, this season, if Jordan Poole takes a step. If Jordan Poole is again kind of lost and looks like he's still more of a long-term project than a guy who can help them out now, then that puts a ton of pressure on Eric Paschal. So for me, I'd rather see Jordan Poole come along because this team desperately needs shooting. And I think he's the most likely candidate of the bench guys, the bench young guys, to take a step as a shooter. So that's my choice.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. For me, I think it's like Jordan Poole, I can see just not playing games. Like he could be a guy that I could just see playing like no minutes, right? Because of Wanamaker, Bazemore, and then Damian Lee. Like I could see weeks where Poole just doesn't play. And then like even Nico Mannion, right? I think with Eric Paschal, he's going to have to play. There's no way around it. He's playing 20 minutes a game at least. And then last season, the way he played, the way he scored, he played on a team that was terrible. So he had all the touches ever. And I think now he's going to be in a little bit different of a system and an environment where can he still play the same way? So I think it's just – I like the comparison of Jordan Poole and Eric Paschal. Can they get to a Lou Will, Trez, right, type of player? Again, Lou Will and Trez are like – Lou Will is like 6
I mean, that was the best benchman scoring combo.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's like a high bar, or it's like you want them to get there. They probably won't. But I think it's like a good barometer to set for those guys because it's not like Brett Wanamaker is going to be here next season. You know, it's not like Ken Bazemore is going to be here next season. Damn near Kelly Oubre might not even be here next season. So it's like those guys are guys that you want Poole and Paschal to take the next step up. I just think that Paschal is probably going to have to play more minutes than Jordan Poole. At least with Jordan Poole, if they don't play him, I don't know if it matters that much to the Warriors if he doesn't play.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, we haven't mentioned Damian Lee, but he's not young. But Damian Lee is a guy that Steve Kerr likes because he knows exactly what he's going to get from him.
Yep.
For me, though, it would be disappointing if Poole can't play himself into the rotation and it's Wanamaker and Damian Lee. That might be what happens. If he can't outplay Damian Lee, he can't outplay Damian Lee. But for me, Jordan Poole taking a step would be huge for the team.
Because Damian Lee, his thing is like he can shoot well, right? Like he can shoot well.
And he knows how to move. And he plays hard, definitely.
But like neither of them are that great on defense. Like I don't think of Damian Lee as a defender. Jordan Poole certainly not. But Jordan Poole is someone that can handle the rock. He can make some passes. He can go to the rim. Every time Damian Lee puts the ball down, I'm petrified. At least with Jordan Poole, I'm a little less petrified. So I think he has a little more upside there. But yeah, if Poole's shooting 31% from three, like get out of there, right? Like you can't do it. At least someone you can put out there, he's shooting 37, 38. So I think they need a little bit more from Poole. We'll see if it's possible.
Yeah. I mean, if Poole takes a step, I feel like it's going to be a very positive sign for the team. Last question. Who has the most pressure on them?
Oh.
You want me to go first?
Are we talking about? I'm like trying to think.
Oh, you can take this any direction. I mean, we might as well take it every direction.
Every direction. If I were to say who has the most pressure on them for this team to be good this season, it is without a doubt Steph Curry. It is not even close. So let's start there. He had like they've put a lot of length and athleticism around them, which we're very happy about. But then I think people can literally play a triangle in two defense. Where they might. Yeah, right. Like they can play a triangle in two defense on Steph. and that, and Steph is not someone that's going to look to ever break that. It goes without saying. I don't think I need to go through why the pressure is on him. He has a lot on his shoulders for a team that, if you think Kelly Oubre can shoot 30 higher than 35%, why? It's because of Steph Curry. If you want to go through Andrew Wiggins, can he shoot better? Can he play better? Can he finish better than who? Can he unlock the quote unquote potential that he's had? Why? Steph Curry, right? Draymond Green, same thing. He's great on defense, but if Draymond Green, his bread and butter has always been the pick and roll with Steph Curry. That's why he has 2-on-1 advantages, right? So if you think he's throwing those lobs to James Wiseman, why? It's Steph Curry. So I think without a doubt, the pressure is on Steph Curry for the team to be good. I think the pressure on this franchise, though, I don't know if that's Steph Curry. That might be on someone else. But I'll let you answer it first, and then we'll take another direction.
Ooh, I'm kind of curious where you're going with that. Okay, so I'll go with the other one. I'm going to say Draymond Green. The lame, honest answer is I think there's equal pressure on Steph and Draymond. But I think Draymond being in good shape, which he looks like he is, and being the vocal leader and getting the defense going matters more, because I think what Steph – I think there's less variance in Steph's mood. You know what you're going to get from Steph. You know the effort level you're going to get from Steph. You know the shot making you're going to get from him. And with Steph, my concern, if I even want to call it a concern, is I just need him to stay healthy. I just need him to not break his hand. I need him to not sprain his ankle. I need him to not, you know, tweak his hip. Like, just stay healthy, and I feel confident in Steph. I think Draymond's the one who's been off of a few bad years where he's been physically beaten down. He's now gotten the very long layoff that he needed. Because they played so many playoff games, and he's the one who always took the biggest physical toll in the playoffs. Like, everyone gets beaten down in the playoffs, but not everyone's playing center against a guy who's 5 inches taller than them and having to box out a guy who's 270 like Draymond is, right?
I think
Draymond tends to, I think they feed off each other. Like, there's no other way around it. Good cop, bad cop, leader of the offense, leader of the defense. Yin and yang. Like, so much of the Warriors' success is related to the yin and the yang of those two. And I guess for me, the pressure's on Draymond to remind everyone the reason he got that $100 million contract is, for all the things he can't do, there's only about 5 players in the league who can do the things he can do. You know, everyone focuses on the lack of a jump shot, but how many guys can quarterback a defense, lead the fast break, be a triple double, basically do all the things he does? You know, like, we talk about how great Ben Simmons would be here. Who would you rather have in a playoff game, peak Draymond or peak Ben Simmons?
Nah, yeah, it's not close.
It's so for me, I think Draymond's heard the noise. You know, actually, not I think, like, he's basically let everyone know he's heard the noise. Draymond is uses that stuff as motivation. So I'm excited to see him, and I think the pressure is good for him because he plays best when he's angry.
There also shouldn't be an excuse, though, too. Like, it's right. Not like he's 36 years old. Like, I get it. Like, he's been great. He's got that contract, but he's not 36 years old. You know, you don't get to play that card. Like, he's done enough. Like, he has done enough to be a Hall of Fame player. He's done enough. He's been an all-star. Like, he's going to be known as an amazing basketball player. But there should also be no excuse to the fact that if he comes out this season and he shits the bed, like, that's not good. Like, simply, like, I don't think there's an excuse for that. You can't just say, well, he's worn down. Like, he's older now. Like, he's just not the same guy. I don't think he gets to play that card. He's in his early 30s, man. Like, and he's taken a year and a half off. So, I'm with you. I think, to me, I guess it's just that Steph is more important. So, I think the pressure is more on him. But again, sure, if you look at it from the perspective, like, hey, if there's a guy that needs to bounce back, yeah, easily, by far, it's Draymond Green. By far. Even if Clay was healthy, it'd be that guy, right? Because with Clay, it's at least you can say he's coming off an ACL. So there's really not as much pressure on him.
Yeah, so I mean, the lame, honest answer is it's 50-50. And it should be, because they're the two leaders of the team. Everything with the Warriors started with them and it's going to end with them, one way or another, right? So I'm excited to see it. I think there's going to be an appropriate amount of hunger for both of them.
There is, though, I think one guy that I think there's a lot of pressure.
Mentioned?
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure on this guy to really...
Smilagic?
Yeah. I wish if there was any pressure on Smilagic, I think this team is finished for it. Steve Kerr. It's Steve Kerr. Like, the guy, again, all these guys are pretty much, they're safe. They've won three titles. They've got the dynasty. Like, all that is done, and you know, we're just talking for the future.
Yeah, you're only a troll if you are 100% a troll if you're like, ooh, if Steph doesn't do anything this year, we have to rethink how good he really is. Like, only a troll would say that. He's already cemented himself in basketball history.
And to me, same thing with Steve Kerr. He cemented himself as a top five coach in the league, you know, one of the greatest role players, just winners of all time. But I am very curious, and I think there's a lot of pressure here to see what he can do with a team that is not as talented as the one that he came into 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
Middle of the road talent. Not middle of the road, but not contender either.
And I don't think that it's a bad thing, right? He came in with all that talent. Again, that talent didn't get very far. And he took that talent to become an all-time great team. So he can do that. Now it's, can Steve Kerr bring a middle road team to become a contender? I'm not asking Steve Kerr to turn this team into a championship team, because they don't have Clay, they don't have Iguodala, they don't have Livingston, they don't have those guys. Andrew Bogut even, right? But can he build a system and a scheme that allows Kelly Oubre, Andrew Wiggins, James Wiseman, and those guys to flourish, right? Because if guys take a step back, like to me, for example, if Andrew Wiggins takes a step back, a guy that's been in the system for a year, I think that says a lot to me about Steve Kerr and whether he could coach this team, because you're not always going to have elite talent if he's going to be the coach for the next 10 years. So
and you're not always going to have like the highest character guys. Like they love to talk about character, and they should, but like, there's a reason guys like Steph, Clay, and Iguodala, and, you know, Livingston are so special, because like, that's not the way most guys are wired.
Yes. I think a good example to me, I know you love the Boston comps. I love the Miami comps. Miami's my, like, that's mine. Because with Spo, look, he has all time talent. He won two championships. He got Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, LeBron, won two titles, got through the growing pains. And then from
Udonis
there,
he has them.
Yeah. And Udonis, right. From there, he hasn't won anything since, but he's shown that he can win with middle of the road talent. And I think,
and he can develop talent.
And that's something that Steve Kerr, that's what he should be aiming for. I think Spo's the best coach in the NBA. I think he's the best
coach. I would agree.
And I think that's what, if Steve Kerr can show me that he can build a team the way that Spo does and has the longevity that Spo has, yeah, then he's right up there. I just haven't seen it. And so I think that's like sneaky pressure kind of a little bit. Because again, Steve Kerr to me is not going anywhere. You know, Bob Meyer is not going anywhere. You know, Kirk Lakeup definitely not going anywhere, right? To me, Steph's not going anywhere. So it's like it's not a matter of
Steph ain't going anywhere unless he demands out.
Yeah. He's not getting traded, I don't think.
They're not going to go Danny Ainge cutely shop them to see what picks they can get, because that's dumb.
So that's my guy. Yeah, that's the guy that has a little pressure on him.
I would also throw out Bob Myers has a little pressure on him, because – and his pressure is different because he's a GM. But now he took Wiseman number two. He has this Wolves pick, which could potentially be the piece that links – a dynasty to maybe a second run, right? Yeah. And, you know, he doesn't have day-to-day pressure because, like, I mean, what can he really do with the Wolves pick right now? Like, he's not going to make that decision until next summer, right? But, like, we'll get to watch Wiseman. And if Wiseman turns out to just be another run-of-the-mill center you can find, like a DeAndre Jordan, and Patrick Williams, who went number four, I'm just picking a random name, turns into kind of a guy you want to build around, let's say he's like Paul George or something like that, that's not going to look good on Bob. And, you know, and that's, you know, if we come into the season and we start seeing Okoro or Patrick Williams, one of these guys who went, you know, after Wiseman, looks significantly better, I think the pressure will mount on Bob and people will be like, do we trust Bob with this Wolves pick and this draft full of all these talented Jalens to make that pick, you know? And it's not fair to put that all on him, but like, he is the head of the front office. You know, he's the guy who's going to get credit if the pick works and blame if it doesn't, right or wrong. So
I just don't know if he's the guy that is the one that's 100% making that decision. I don't know if Bob Myers, he might have wanted James Wiseman, but I don't know how much of it is he gets to make that decision. I think part of it also is, well, Steve Kerr wanted James Wiseman. So he gets, so I right. think that pressure is probably on him too. Cause it's,
I like, mean, it's more organizational. Yeah.
Could be everyone. I mean, yeah, I think it's a good point.
Do you think if the Wiseman thing doesn't work, like, I don't think this is going to be the case, but if the Wiseman thing doesn't work out, and let's just say worst case happens and they whiff on the Wolves pick, they pick Harry B instead of Kawhi Leonard. Do you think they'll start to be pressure on the Warriors and be like, you know,
oh yeah,
are you, you know, you used to, you guys used to have Jerry West, you used to have Travis Schlenk, you used to have Chelsea Lane. Now all I see is people who claimed all the credit for that unable to do it without them helping.
I 100% agree. I think there's that. I think there's a little bit of that noise now, but I don't think it's that large just because the team is still good and just because nobody cares about Jacob Evans. It's like, fine. Like, they should have picked someone better than Jacob Evans, but.
Yeah, I was going to say, they've also, like, when you win three rings, people give you a mulligan on a few bad picks.
Exactly. But you don't hit on a top two pick and then a top and then a lottery pick in the next season, a loaded draft. I think they will hear the noise, and I think they will deserve to hear the noise. That's the other thing. I think they will deserve it. If those guys I also don't think that, you know, any of these guys. I also think Wiseman was the right pick, so that's why, like, I have to kind of comprehend that these guys later on, like Patrick Williams, becomes the next Paul George. Like, that just doesn't make sense in my head. Sure. But again, like, who knows, right? Who knows? To me, also, that falls on Steve Kerr, because, look, Paul George became Paul George. He would have become Paul George anywhere. But, dude, James Wiseman is literally in the best position possible. Like, there is nowhere that he could have gone that, like, if James Wiseman ends up being Chris Bosh, it's either he could have done it anywhere anyway, but if it's not that, then it has to be the Warriors. Like, that's the only situation for all these guys to excel in those top five picks, right? If Patrick Williams ends up being Paul George, it's not because of where he went. It's because Patrick Williams is that fucking good. So I think it also falls on Steve Kerr to say, you better develop these guys correctly. You better figure out how to develop James Wiseman if he's not going to be like a superstar in himself. So, yeah, there's some pressure on these guys. That's how we'll preview the training camp. But I'm excited to see how it goes. I'm excited to see them compare James Wiseman to some superstar coming out and hear what Fitz is going to say to come the first preseason game.
Oh, I'm so ready for Fitz. Maybe next week we'll do top five cringeworthy Fitz projector our takes for him. All right, let's get out of here. We'll be here. We'll get another episode up in a few weeks. Subscribe, rate 5 stars. Thanks, guys.